I'm going to start with the intro and I'm going to give myself some time. Oh, I feel like I have to be on like I'm a star.
Please, I'm a
star. That's going to be the ad. Welcome to Guerreras Podcast, the show where we talk about Latinidad, reproductive justice, and politics. I'm your host, Aurea, and today's show is about a phenomenon that I have noticed often in the spaces that I'm in as a reproductive justice advocate. And honestly, also as, you know, as a Latina, when I get to meet other Latinas in the movement for abortion rights and abortion liberation, we end up talking about the fact that there seems to be a connection between being the eldest daughter and becoming an abortion activist. I know, think about it. Like, how many of us do you know? It's not just interesting, it's truly a phenomenon. And I wanna really dig into it with a very special guest for today's episode. Her name is Katia Garcia Cibulskis. She is a community organizer in Colorado. You were a guest in one of our shows here in the state talking about organizing, about reproductive rights. And after that show, we ended up maybe almost an hour outside of the station talking about this pipeline of being an eldest daughter and an abortion activist. But Katia, welcome to Guerreras. How are you doing?
I am doing good. I'm so excited to be here. And yeah, no, I think like how I build friendships is you kind of have to like trauma dump a little bit, right? Like you have to like put your stuff out there and be like, I'm an oldest daughter. And you're like, oh my God, I am too. And I'm like, do you have this kind of trauma? Yes, I have this kind of trauma. Mine is a little bit different in this way, but it's also kind of the same. And then, yeah, we all end up in other people's businesses, hence why we are abortion activists.
How we end up in other people's business. That is truly, and it achieves most that way sometimes, but also like, just think about it. Latinas were natural organizers. There's a rumor, there's a chisme, it's going to spread. You need somebody to sleep at, over at your house? We're going to find out. The amount of group chats I'm in with my family that are not just three people, I'm talking it's seven, it's 10, it's 12. I just want to say, natural born organizers, it's in our blood. Just like when somebody plays a Luis Mi song or El Buki, we immediately, it's like the spirit calls us into the dance floor. Am I right?
100%. And I think like a lot of it just even has to do with like being the oldest daughter, right? Like you become somebody's protector, usually our moms. And so we become like the oldest brother. Like people think like they're super cool because they have oldest brothers. You do not know protection until you have an oldest daughter in your life, because an older brother might do the whole like machismo, like, oh, you're messing with my little sister, like whatever. An oldest daughter will psychologically traumatize you. Like they will send you to therapy for the rest of your life.
That is true. The burns, the jokes, nobody got it like we got it. And even though I'm an only child, but I took care of three of my younger cousins for the majority of my life. And my house, when I was living in Mexico with my grandparents and my mother, the house was never quiet. The house was never quiet. The cousins were always there. They were bullying me too. So I was in that mode of like, oh my goodness, I have to take care of you and you're mean to me. Thankfully, they grew out of that after they were like 16 or 17. But till this day, I'm like, nobody can take away my eldest card, because not only am I the oldest one of all the primos, I had to take care of your ass for many years. This is my introduction to the best form of birth control. Is I don't want to deal with this again if I want children.
LOL. Pero like your comunidad is your sibling too. I was an only child for 10 years. So like long enough that I remember being an only child. And that's the same thing. I was like, I didn't have siblings. The world is my sibling. You're in my third grade class. You're my little sister. So somebody says shit to you, I'm going to come tell them something, you know?
I don't even know how to explain the fact that we're also those kids that when somebody was getting bullied, when somebody was getting picked on, we decided to be the helper. We decided to stand up for that kid mainly. And, you know, we were saying about earlier how, like, you get to know other people through trauma dumping. And hey, how are we going to be able to relate through these shared wound? But anyways, all jokes aside, we stand up for those kids because nobody really stood up for us, right? And again, that pipeline of eldest daughter with the obligations, with the sense of self-worth, trying to find value, and then you end up in one of these movements, especially when it comes to reproductive rights and abortion, where the value of a person is always the core of that argument, right? Like, why do we need to argue you having the right to terminate a pregnancy? It's because they're putting value on not the human that's pregnant, right? On something else. And it's not necessarily the fetus.
Yeah. We want you to find your inner oldest daughter. If you are not one, welcome. We will help you become one. And I think you're right. It goes back to, like, being an oldest daughter, you witness injustices done to, like, other women in your life, right? But, and because you are the eldest daughter, you not only take on a caretaker role, you take on a protector role. So I think, like, I remember, like, seeing something be done to my mom or to my grandma, you know, and they might be, like, more meek about it. And they'd be like, I'm just not gonna, you know, I'm gonna leave it. And I'd be like, no, we're gonna say something about it and we're gonna fix it now. And I really think that that's why we end up, like, organizing and advocating for others. It's like, it's really truly just, like, in the essence of who we are as, like, community members, right? Like, I don't stop being an oldest daughter just because my mom's in a different state. Like, now I'm just the community's oldest sister here, like, ready to fight for your rights.
What a beautiful way. And that is, you know, a way to give our flowers to the community, right? Because there's something so quintessential to the Latina experience, which is we are a community-based individual, right? What does my community, my culture need from me? We're always thinking about giving back, right? And as the eldest daughter, going back, and, you know, I had therapy today and my therapist was talking to me about, what do you feel your obligation is as a daughter? What do you feel your obligation is as a partner or in my job? And I'm like, wow, I value things based on obligation, not necessarily on, is this what I want? Is this what I need? Because the eldest daughter, and, you know, we can go between stereotype or kind of like the idea, is that you are obligated to take care of your parents. You're obligated to take care of the household. You're obligated to take care of your siblings if you have one. And if you don't, you end up becoming your parents' partner in your family.
Yeah, wow. I feel like I just had a realization, and I am, like, equally thankful to your therapist and also super frustrated because, like, we've talked about this, right? I feel like part of the trauma of being an oldest daughter is, like, the caretaker role. And when you're in a caretaker role, you don't always have the time to feel your feelings, right? Like, there's just no time. There's shit that needs to be done. There's things that need to be attended to. There's something happening to somebody else that needs to be prioritized because of obligations. And so now I'm like, damn, you just opened up, like, a whole amount of feelings that I'm going to have to process that I'm not ready to process.
Well, then I've done my job well, because that is the whole point. I want other people to be having the same realization as they're listening to this episode, because that is, you know, another part of the conversation is when it comes to the obligation in us as activists, the obligation is the liberation of our communities. It is the empowerment of our communities. It is leaving our community better than how we found it. And that's where we're going to jump in into talking about, right, the Dobbs decision. We are recording this episode a couple of weeks before the 1 year anniversary of Dobbs, which last year in June was a devastating blow for the constitutional right to decide whether to terminate a pregnancy, and also marked the first time the U.S. Supreme Court has taken away a fundamental liberty right. So listen to it. It's the first time in the history of the United States of the Supreme Court, the highest court of the land, took away a fundamental liberty right. And it all has to do with the control of the bodies of women, of people that are can get pregnant, of people that want to decide if and when to become parents. And for anybody that thinks that this was the right decision for the courts to do, just think about anything else the courts could have decided to take up on the docket, right? And this is an issue also if you are just learning about abortion rights and reproductive justice and rights history. It is also the work of the anti-abortion movement for almost 50 years. The moment Roe was part of our laws in 1973, the next day, the anti-abortion movement began to work to ensure that they removed it. So it isn't something that came up in the past 5 years, in the past 10 years. It's been in the making. So when Justice Alito from the Supreme Court upheld the Mississippi law and explicitly overruled Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which is a case from the 90s, it also removed all federal constitutional protections for abortion and announced that moving forward, all abortion laws and regulations are to be assessed under the most lenient level of judicial scrutiny, in quotes, rational bias. So that means that the courts decided to say, you know what? All you 50 states, it's up to you all. Like, we don't want to deal with this. It's not my problem no more. We removed it. This is what you asked of us, right? And like 50 plus of us said, no, this is not what we asked because this is not what the American people wanted. So with that little history lesson about how we got to the 1 year anniversary of Roe being removed from the framework of our country, let's talk about also, what has that meant even before Roe was overturned, right? Because our communities know what it's been like to live without Roe. People assume we all had the same access to legality and protections, and that's not true.
Mm-mm. I think a couple of thoughts, right, like are coming up. Like, I think first, the gaslighting that went on within progressive circles during that time, right? Like you had activists, primarily activists of color, so Black, Indigenous, and people of color being like, hey, something really bad is going to happen. They've been working at it for a really long time, and it's going to stick. Like, eventually, they're going to throw something, and it's going to work. And everybody was like, y'all are crazy. This is never going to happen. There's no way. Like, sitting in your privilege thinking that there's no way, right? And then it happened. And everybody's like, I can't believe it's happening. Like, people of color have been telling you this shit since basically Roe was put into place, right? We've always been like, hey, this is close. Another thing, we've known that Roe has never been enough. Our communities have been dealing, basically living as if there is no Roe versus Wade since it was enacted. Our communities have been living without access, been living in abortion deserts, right? Like it's an issue that has plagued us since before. And now, like, seeing everybody being like, oh no, abortion is gone. What are we going to do? Like, welcome, join the fight, grab a pitchfork, let's go. Ultimately though, like, yeah, it was really disappointing to see it from our own circles. I think we all expected kind of like anti-abortion people to like have this vibe, you know, but it's always disappointing when you see it come from inside the house. And that's, I think, where we failed in the fight to keep abortion legal, is like the quarreling and the gaslighting within our own groups.
Absolutely. The gaslighting, the quarreling, and the part in, you know, my background also having studied political science and having a lot of conversation with candidates, people that want to run for office, people that hope to one day run a campaign. And for years I had been telling them, we as, and you know, I'm a registered Democrat, so because that's public record, so you can know that. But as Democrats, we need to make reproductive rights, especially abortion access, the Democratic issue. And I had been sounding this alarm for about since 2019 with my work in local campaigning in Southern California with different groups where I was like, you need to own it. It is, it's meant to be our issue. And they're like, whoa, I don't want to touch it. And now Fast forward to 2023, and the Democratic Party is trying to make abortion their topic, the way they get elected, the thing that's on the top of the ballot, which, by the way, we know is going to be one of the main issues that make people turn out to vote in the presidential election 2024. It's a given. Nobody has to run the numbers. We know. And now, you know, looking back at it and the quarreling and the fights inside the House, and then these people came to us saying, what can we do? And part of me, I don't know about you, part of me was like, if you would have listened to me the first time when we were telling you that it wasn't going to stop also at Roe, right? It wasn't going to stop here. The fake clinics all across the country, the impact and the bans on the LGBTQ plus community, especially trans kids, right? All of this has to do with autonomy. Bodily autonomy. It's not even about just abortion. It is, are you free to be free? And the answer from the courts and other politicians is no, only certain people get to be free. And we're having that kind of discussion within the Latino community as well. Who gets to be more free than the other people? Because it sure as hell ain't women, because we are the most disproportionately impacted group with a pay gap, disproportionately impacted group in the labor force, disproportionately impacted group in educational systems. It's clearly never meant about todos nosotros. O sea, es nada más es cierto de nosotros.
No, exactamente. And I think too, like, what's wild is even now, right, there's like this rhetoric, like we're in Colorado, right? So for context, like, this is where we are, this is where we live. You have people being like, oh, well, we're totally fine. Like, Colorado's fine. Like, we're good. And like, I don't want to fear monger. So I'm like, I get what you mean. You know, like, your rights are protected. Like, if you have the economic means, you can access abortion care in the state of Colorado, but it's not freaking accessible. Like, our communities live in places where the next abortion clinic is what, 2 hours away? And okay, let's say that you have a car. Do you have money for gas? Can you afford to take time off work? Do you have childcare covered? Like, are you documented? Like, there's so many steps and barriers still within states that have legal abortion access that it's just like that whole conversation of legality versus accessibility. And we've already talked about this, but you know, it's not about the babies, just like it's not about protecting the kids. Because if that was the case, then tell me why in my city of Fort Collins, Colorado, there's a bunch of like anti-abortion, like billboards right everywhere. And they're like, this is a baby at 9 weeks gestation. First of all, it's not. I'm pregnant right now. I've seen what a fetus looks like at 9 weeks gestations. And it looks like a melted gummy bear that was left in the dashboard of your car. It can be a beautiful thing, but it doesn't look like a full formed, like 36 week pregnancy. Okay. So let's start there. But second of all, if it was really about the kids and it was really about families, how many lunches do you think you could have paid for instead of putting up that fucking billboard? How many like school assistance could you have given out? Like, how many community resources could you have created for these folks instead of the fucking stigmatizing billboard that you put up on Shields Avenue? Like, what, you know what I mean? It's just wild.
It's about the kids, Katia. It's always about the kids. Yeah, I've seen those billboards. Even when you leave Denver a little bit, and you know, it's kind of like that cliche saying, like when you pass up train tracks, and it says, you know, you have fingerprints after 6 weeks, and you know, the inner academic in me is like, where's your source? Because I would really like to read that paper as I'm driving. Like, drop the link, right? I'm always one for receipts. Today, one of my friends said that my Google Drive is Fort Knox because I got receipts for everything. Nobody can access nothing without my extreme required. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? At least I know if you fuck around, you're going to find out in its facts. Like, don't come for me for that. So on that same vein, right, antis, don't come for us, because we will read the paper. We have sat in the legislative session with you all, listening to you spew hate and misinformation, disinformation, which, by the way, these campaigns of, you know, they get fingerprints at 6 weeks and you can hear a fetal heartbeat at 9. And those tactics are so harmful for the Latino community, because these billboards, these radio ads, these newspaper ads, these mailers are being sent to Latino counties, right? So then ourselves, right, as activists, as organizers, we need to also unpack and recognize that we are being victims at a political ploy by a specific movement that only wants to use us for, well, honestly, as pawns. And anybody that's like, nah, the Democratic Party does it too. See how I didn't say which party? It's about votes, honey. It's about the Electoral College. It's about getting that. But it is important for us to not ignore the fact that they are targeting our communities with abortion disinformation and in Spanish. So nefarious.
It's fucking predatory. And the thing is, it's like we're being targeted, but we're also being blamed. Because if our communities are like, well, no, I'm not going to do what you want, then either party's going to be like, you didn't show up to vote for us because you're uneducated or because whatever they decide to say instead of the actual truth, which is like the voter suppression that happens or like the misinformation and the lack of attention in the communities or the lack of like foreseen in like actual completed promises, right? Like this is an issue that I take with our current president and that I take with like all the allies who were like, vote for this candidate and we're going to hold them accountable. But now if a Latinx person or I as a Latina critique something that Biden has done, they're like, well, he's trying his best. And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting that he's trying his best because he ran being like, Latinos, vote for me. Like, I'm going to do all these things for you. Like, you matter. I care about you. And then it's crickets. But then all the people who said we're going to hold him accountable are like, oh, but he's doing his best. I don't need the weaponized incompetence of another white man. Like, I deal with it in my line of work all the time. I don't need it.
The weaponized of a white man that spoke. Okay. Let's just even go to that and connect it to the weaponization of our obligations in our Latina household, of being told that if we don't do it, we're not good children, we're not good stewards or good examples to our primos and other people in the community. Also weaponizing, right? What makes a good kid? What makes you a good daughter? What makes you a good activist? And we work in a movement where, think about it, we work in a movement where we have to convince other people that our autonomy, our independence, and our self-determination is ours, only ours and nobody else's. And think about being a Latina woman, an immigrant woman, an undocumented woman, a single mother. You always have to find a way to convince others that you have value in society, that you have value in the workplace, that you have value in a family. You know, that for me, when we talked about this pipeline of the eldest daughter to an abortion activist, it totally made sense because of that point exactly.
Yeah, no, literally. And I think another thing that I was thinking about was going back to your Fort Knox, you know, that is your Google Drive. I feel like that's part of being an oldest daughter. Like that's our trauma because like the patriarchy still gets to us. Our trauma comes because of the patriarchy. Machismo still gets to us. We're told by men constantly that we are wrong or that we're not doing something correctly, something that they don't even know how to do. So you better come with receipts if you're going to be a gritona and you're going to be a chingona and you're going to be like, no, that's not how I'm doing this. Because you're so scrutinized simply by the fact that you are a woman speaking up, that you have to come and be like, here's my 30 emails where you said you were going to do this one thing and you didn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's something that we already have to do. But back to this whole weaponized incompetence, right? Like, as oldest daughters, we see that a lot. We see that from everybody. It's like, we have to be here explaining, defending why we deserve the right to exist or to live in our own body as we choose to. And then we apply that to other things too. Like think about like watching the kids. Why can't my little brother do that? Oh, because da 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 da. Like there's always a reason, right? Or, oh, you have to cook dinner. Okay, why can't dad do that? Oh, because that, like, there's always a fucking reason why someone's incompetence is now your responsibility as the oldest daughter.
Sometimes I use that word and people say it's too strong of a word. You know what's too strong of a word is letting a little kid watch two other little children, right? What's too strong is that an 8-year-old kid becomes a notary and translator for their parents when they go to, you know, oficinas for legal matters, or when you go to the doctor and the doctor's like, well, I'm trying to explain something medical to you, and the child is like, I only know certain words, right? And you know, part of it, some people will say, well, it's what we do to take care of our family. It's what we do in order to take care of each other. But how much of that also bleeds into our burnout? How much of that also bleeds into our distrust of other communities, right? About our lack of, I mean, think about it. Eldest daughters, the whole joke is like, are you highly independent or are you an eldest daughter in a Latino household? And I have to unpack the fact that there are really good people in my friend group, in my family, that if I ask them for help, they're going to show up. Like, why do I have this feeling, this dread that nobody's going to come to help us? And then I look at the abortion movement and I look at our work and I'm like, oh, that's why. Because we asked people to come help us, because we asked organizations, because we asked people in power to help us. And they're like, maybe not right now. Maybe later I'll come back. I'll circle back. And then it all just, it's a circle, right? It's not a Venn diagram of like the being an activist and being and having obligations as a young child. This is a full circle. That's what it is.
100%. 100%. And I think too, like another thing that got me thinking is like the word resilient. I don't know if you hear that a lot. I know I'm like, I'm rolling my eyes at the thought, but I get that a lot as an immigrant, as a woman, as a Latina, as an abortion activist, and as an oldest daughter. I get, oh, well, you're so resilient. But at what cost, mommy? It wasn't just like easy. It doesn't come like easy. It doesn't mean that I'm having a great time. I'm resilient because I went through shit that made me resilient, because you have, and yes, absolutely, it is what we do for our community, right? We are resilient. We are an immovable object when we need to be, or we are an unstoppable force. We are both. I feel like eldest daughters are both. We are an unstoppable force and we are an immovable object depending on what is needed. And yes, it's what we do for our community. It's what we do for our families. And it's a role that someone has to fill, and it's ours, but at what cost? And I feel like that's the thing that people don't think about, because the people who usually say those things are either people who don't have to fill that role, so they don't identify with the costs and the sacrifices that come with that, or they're martyrs, which like is difficult in its own way, because you're like, I see you. Thankfully, I am at a place in my journey where I don't accept that. I don't accept being a martyr. I can be an immovable object for my family while also acknowledging the difficulties, the trauma, and the sacrifices that got me here at the same time.
It is a beautiful way to give words to feelings that I am sure so many of us have felt before, where at what cost, right, to get here? At what cost in order to learn that there's a better way to grow, a better way to solve problems, a better way to express what we need or what we want in a moment. And also in order to become better stewards of our community, better advocates, people that can bring ideas in a way that are both authentic to the cause and authentic to the culture. We need to have these discussions, and we need to be able to look introspectively at the things that have created harm in our communities, because there is no way for progress if we don't unpack that either. We would be doing a disservice to our own community of Latinos if we didn't unpack the ways that classism, economic injustice, racism, colorism, that do not allow us to move towards progress. What is a takeaway for you as an organizer, as somebody that is in Fort Collins, right? So different from Denver, and as a Latina, as a daughter, but especially in the past year that we have endured grief like no other, with not only reproductive rights being on the ballot, but our trans hermanos and hermanas being attacked every single day is something, some new news alert. Every day we're seeing some other court or politician trying to put a ban and criminalize access to reproductive health care and attacking immigrants. The violence that we are witnessing this year, just in the past 12 months, it is enough to put anybody on out.
The biggest thing, there's two. And I think the first one is hard because I think, like, as Latinas, we've all had similar experiences. Like, one is you have to make time for rest. And if you grow up in a household like I did, the grind, the hustle is glamorized. In capitalism, the grind and the hustle is glamorized. Like, I grew up feeling guilty for taking a nap because I could have been doing something productive. And it wasn't even necessarily that, like, people were telling me to feel guilty, is that I would see my parents feeling guilty or being like, no, I don't have time to take a break. I don't have time to do this. I have to work through my vacation because this is what I have to do to be, like, a successful and contributing member of society, right? Like, I saw it a lot in my dad. Like, my dad had to outwork every white coworker that he had to prove his value to get his kids a green card. You know what I mean? It's really hard to accept rest when you've grown up with no example of what that looks like. But that's the first thing, is like, it's okay to take a nap. It's okay if you want to doom scroll on TikTok. It's okay if you don't want to talk politics with your friends for 5 minutes because you do that every other fucking day. You know, it's okay. So, like, accepting rest, one. The other one is, like, joyous fucking resistance, dude. I hope that all the homophobes see me and my trans siblings having the best fucking time at Pride, unfucking bothered by your posts or your angry tweets or, like, your Facebook statuses. I hope you see us having a good time. I hope that all the people in my philosophy classes in college that said that gender studies would get me nowhere, or that would be like, oh, there comes, like, the angry blue-haired feminist bitch, I hope they see me having a great fucking time doing this for a living and, like, enjoying myself. And I think those are the two biggest things, is, like, my joy is a fuck you to other folks who don't support what I do and what my morals are and where I find my peace. And then also knowing to say, no, I'm going to take a break because I need it and I deserve it. And even though the world is on fire, you can't put it out if you're pouring from an empty cup.
Going back to this thing about, like, we glamorize the grind. We glamorize the sense of capitalism as immigrants, as women, as people that work in nonprofits or have worked in nonprofits or at the grassroots level before. And I saw myself thinking that I had value as a person if I succeeded. I had value as a woman if I was smarter than anybody else, if I did things better than anybody else. But it took me burning out. It took me looking at myself in the mirror, not recognizing who that person was or what that person wanted, to realize that I wasn't really living my unapologetic, authentic, fucking guerrera self, right? And it kind of goes back into why I even wanted to have this kind of podcast. It goes back into why I build my chosen family with other chingonas, because sometimes I really do need that reality check that our experiences are not just what define us. It's kind of like, it's like a canon, right? It's like the thing that makes you, like, the main character in your story, but it is not what defines you, because what defines you, like you mentioned, your morals, right? What you value, what you hold dear to yourself. And for us, because I would like to think, right, why are we even in this freaking line of work of abortion? One of the most contested issues in American democracy, one of the most contested issues in Latino countries across the world and Latino communities in the United States, one of the most contested issues, if we only just talk about religion itself. I would like to think, at least my reason, and then I'll pass it to you, that for me, it's because there's nothing more liberating than being a full person. That is what it comes down to me. And I was saying, you know, growing up Catholic and about Catholicism and our confirmations and all these things. And I learned these old myths about why women get periods or why people with a uterus get periods. And I heard, well, it's because that's God's punishment to women because how Eve tempted Adam. And I was like, I don't remember Eve forcing that apple down his throat. And I also do not think that God was like, this is exactly the way we're going to get them back. Haha. At a young age. And, you know, you can tell, you can hear my accent. I love that. Sometimes I want you to hear the Howard J when I'm talking. As a young person, I realized there's no way that as women, right, I identify like that, we're being punished for autonomy, for making a decision. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, maybe.
Yeah, maybe there was somebody who wanted to give the people knowledge and they got sent downstairs for trying to give us knowledge and critical thinking. Can we talk about that? Like, what the fuck is that? Like, oh, that, like, that's such like emotional abuser tactic to be like, I am this all-knowing power and I don't want you to have critical thinking or knowledge, but I'm gonna put it right here and you're not allowed to touch it. But I'm all knowing, so I know you're gonna touch it. Like, we just got set up for failure. If that really is how it went down with Adam and McRib, like, then it really, like, that is, like, what? So we got set up to fail from the beginning. So is this just some fucking sick joke? Like, is that what was supposed to happen? Like, I don't know. It feels predatory. It feels gaslighty. It feels abuser.
Oh my God, I'm crying. McRib. I think going in being set up for failure, how we don't give ourselves grace to fail either as women, as Latinas, and also in the movement, right? We're seeing so many people right now rile up about what it means a year after Roe has been overturned, a year after we have seen the increase in criminalizations and restrictions to fundamental healthcare. And many of us work in this reality of like, if we fail, lives are at stake. And that's how we were brought up. If we failed at taking care of our families, if we failed at taking care of our siblings or of a community member, those are lives on our hands. And it's no surprise that when we try and do something nice for ourselves to really put our needs forward, we're always thinking somebody else is not going to like that. It's going to rub them off the wrong way. I rather not do it because I do not want to do conflict. But our whole lived experiences have been around chaos and conflict. So even I'm just like, maybe we should try being nice to each other for a change. You know what I mean? Like, maybe I do deserve to tell somebody, no, I can't do that, Thea. I can't do that, Theo, because that's it. No, it's a complete sentence.
You do deserve it. And it feels like absolute shit at the same time. And I think we can live in both, right? We can live in both, like trying to break the cycle of trauma while also acknowledging that it feels really icky to be the one doing it. But it's in the hopes that like other people won't have to, right? And so like one, I'd love to point out that we've already gone full circle and we're back to the thing about obligations. Our community is our obligation. Our families are our obligation. So yeah, there is this sense of like, I cannot fail because these are my obligations. And if I don't achieve them, it's people's lives, it's people's rights, it's people's bodies. And I think like, ultimately, the reason why I found myself in this work, which sounds so sappy, but it really is just out of pure love for people and like an understanding that just because I want to do something with my body doesn't mean that somebody else can or wants to do that thing and shouldn't have to. Pregnancy is beautiful, but it's also like it's painful. I brush my teeth every morning and I throw up every morning. And I understand that while I have committed to my pregnancy and I have committed to being a parent, that's not everybody's reality. And that's okay. And then we're also living in fucking capitalism, right? How is it up to like these controllers to be like, okay, well, we're going to force people to have kids that they can't afford to take care of, but we're also not going to help them. We're going to give no aid for assistance. We're going to give no universal health care. We're going to give no affordable childcare, no minimum wage that is livable. It just, it, it's about control. It's not about the baby. So when I say I do it out of love, I really do, because I love our community and I want to see our community succeed and I want to see them thrive, because I'm here because of my community. I owe my success to my community. It's all this one big universal symbiotic relationship, right? And so what I take, I give back. And it's just all love. And it sounds really gross and sappy. And you know me, I'm not all about feelings, but like, it really is. I love somebody enough to know that they should fucking decide what to do and when to do it, and if they want to do it or if they don't want to do it. And I think that also ties into, like, when we talk about things like reproductive justice, the thing that goes over people's head a lot of the times, that's also the right to have a child. And I don't know if anybody's listening has ever struggled with infertility, but it's a fucking traumatic road, and it's also expensive. It's so expensive. And then you have Catholic hospitals who won't do certain procedures because they're like, well, if you do IVF and you get pregnant with 8 pregnancies, we would rather you put your life at risk than allow you to have your one. Or what happens with the embryos that you don't use? Do we just discard them? Like, it's just, it's a whole circle, right? Like, people should be able to choose to not carry a pregnancy, but people should also have the resources to have a child if they so choose to have one. And that's not our reality right now.
That is not our reality right now. And the to self-determine, right? To be free to make a decision, to be able to raise a child in a healthy and safe environment, to be supported by your local representations, right? Like elected officials, federal and state programs, local programs. Because if you do want to be a parent, if you do want to have a child, if you do want to have a family, there should be nothing in your way of feeling fully supported to do so. And this goes as if you're a parent with a partner, if you're a parent with multiple partners, if you're a single parent. None of that should define your safety, your access to care, the access to education and for food for this child that's going to grow up in this system. None of that. That is why justice is so important in these conversations, in such a huge gap in the conversations of abortion policy and abortion rights and reproductive health care, because it's a big gap systematically. It's not one organization, is not one group of people. Well, maybe there are, or there is, but it's a system, right? And it is important to understand that when we don't fill those gaps, when there's not people like us that are able to problem solve or to discuss these topics in a way that really humanize what's at stake, then that's why we don't see progress. That's why we don't see change. And I also think that's another reason why a lot of folks are disappointed in the little progress we have made in 50 years when we did have Roe in this movement. Because now to do some form of legislation to protect reproductive health care and reproductive rights, and those of us that look like us, that have our lived experiences, that have been sounding the alarm, are kind of like, what do you want me to do now? I told you when this wasn't going to be a contested issue, and now it's on everybody's mind. And I can't stress enough how much we still need the support of our communities and of folks to donate money to abortion funds, to be a clinic escort, to learn about what an abortion is or what reproductive justice is, or how women of color are criminalized so intensely by the judicial system and also by the healthcare system. And until we build that consciousness awareness, none of us are going to actually be able to be free. And you know what? As the eldest child and only child, I feel like, oh my God, I'm never going to get out of this hole, because I can't hold this weight on my own. Right.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think too, one of the things to talk about is, right, the need to have our communities, like, not just involvement, but support. Not to be an abortion activist, to fight for people's rights, you don't need to do what Audia and I do. You don't need to, like, go to every rally. You don't need to organize in community. You don't need to work in this space. It truly is a kitchen conversation. It truly starts there. It starts with just sharing information with family members and with friends. It starts with like whatever your capacity is, right? Like I think back to like the protests and the riots in 2020, and there were a lot of activists, a lot of them very privileged, who were upset at folks who were not in the streets yelling and holding signs. And while I understand and I respect the want to do that, that's a very ableist conversation. It's a conversation that doesn't like think of like a lot of nuances, right? There's police presence at these things. You want somebody who's undocumented to risk their livelihood, their family's livelihood, have the chance to be deported. Like there's so many different ways to be an activist and to fight for what's right than to be the loudest voice in the room holding a sign, or to be doing interviews with press, or to be screaming on social media, which are all valid. But all I'm trying to say is so much smaller efforts are just as meaningful. Having a conversation with your abuelita and opening that line of thought is just as big to me as like storming the Capitol, you know?
Don't storm the Capitol, though. We do not condone the actions of January 6th. Yeah, I think, and you know, let's end with that. You spoke of ways that people don't, that they can take action. And they can create change in their communities, not by going to the rallies, not by putting themselves maybe in harm's way, right? That's not the only way to create change. There's the kitchen table conversations, the having vulnerable, raw conversations with, if it's not with your family, with people that you trust, with people that you know you can feel like you can grow and learn through those conversations. So Katia, based on what we've talked about for today's episode, what does guerrera mean to you?
My God, I love it. I have chills. To me, it's always really meant like doing what's right, despite what other people around you may be saying or the criticism that you're receiving, but also finding the joy in doing it despite others. We can run off rage. We can all be the Elmo meme on fire and like just use that to fuel us. I've been there. But also having a good fucking time and enjoying yourself and finding peace and joy in your true self, that is being a guerrera. Because people who don't want you doing this work, people who don't want to see your work succeeding and moving forward, are upset when they see you happy and when they see the community that you have built and when they see community showing up for you the way that you show up for community. It's finding joy. And it's just saying, I'm not listening to you. I'm doing what I want because it makes me happy.
What a beautiful way to end today's episode about Latinidad, about reproductive rights, but about the obligation that many of us feel when we talk about the safety, the liberations of our communities, and the issues that honestly impact all of us every single day, because this is not just going to be a fight that lasts the next 2 years, the next presidential election. The abortion rights movement is going to define a generation, because for many that grew up with 49 years of Roe, there's going to be 49 years, hopefully not that long, where that doesn't exist. Thank you, Katia, for being here with us today, for being a guest in Guerreras. And do not worry, you will have the notes for today's episode on our Substack. Check out our website, guerreraspodcast.com, to learn more. We will continue this conversation with more guests to come. But thank you for listening. I am Audia, and I will catch you on our next episode.